that a player might do to see what happens and see if things break so that we can report that back to the designers and developers so that they can fix those.
And I am part of the quest pod team. I specifically work with the quest structure, main campaign, and side quest content within the game.
So you guys both play video games critically, right?
Yes and no. A lot of my job actually isn't so much playing the game these days. A lot of the requests that I'll get involve checking things out in the engine, writing documentation. There's a lot of technical writing as a quality assurance tester, like a lot.
There's a whole massive workload involving spreadsheets and documentation that people just don't understand. They think that we just sit there and play games all day, whereas we're really like librarians when it comes to bugs.
When and how did you start thinking that you wanted to organize your workplace?
So the original union push started over almost a year ago at this point. In July of 2021, there was a lawsuit filed by the Department of Fair Employment and Housing in California that alleged extensive sexual and racial harassment and discrimination perpetuated by Activision Blizzard and individuals at Activision Blizzard, which outraged pretty much everyone at the company. And the company's initial response to that lawsuit was abysmal. It was terrible, basically calling the accusers liars, saying that the lawsuit was politically motivated. And so essentially people realized that we weren't going to see the kinds of changes that we need to see to improve our industry, because these issues are prevalent across the entire game industry and we want better. So we realized it was really only going to happen if we took this into our own hands. And another inciting incident was the layoff of a dozen quality assurance workers at Raven Software, which is an Activision studio out in Wisconsin. And the remaining workers immediately went on strike. They were on strike for, I believe, 6 or 7 weeks. And during that time, they organized their union. And so when they returned from striking, they immediately announced their intent to unionize. They went through their NLRB hearing, they got their decision, had their election, and got certified, and they're currently in their bargaining process. So while they were doing all of that, we were also working on our campaign and talking to people in our department and assessing support and talking about the benefits that we could gain from unionizing, getting support. And we're very happy that there are currently 18 testers in our department who are eligible for the union. And 17 of those 18 have been very publicly supportive, signing on to collective letters, taking collective actions, pledging to vote yes. We announced our intent to unionize July of this year, and we had our NLRB hearing in August, and we got our decision at the end of October, and we have our vote count scheduled for Friday. So if the NLRB rejects the company's appeal, then we'll go forward with that. And if the NLRB decides to hear their appeal, then we'll have to wait until they have the time to do that and make a decision on it.
I've certainly heard stories about the misogyny in the world of video game culture. I guess maybe not as much in video game creating, but...
Oh, it's there.
Yeah. So we usually think of organizing as specifically about your hours, your wages, your benefits. So how is it that successful organizing is going to help with that specific problem?
A lot of union leaders and a lot of people who are organizing in other ways. We have various worker-led committees who are doing research and looking for solutions to issues like sexual harassment, discrimination, compensation issues, the need for remote work, crunch culture. So a lot of these organizers, union and otherwise, are women, or they're non-binary, or they're members of other marginalized communities who are standing up and saying, we want to make this better. And the way that a union can help with that is that when you go to bargain, people think, okay, you're bargaining over your compensation and your benefits and things like that. But you can absolutely bargain over other aspects of your working conditions too, including things like, what should the process be for reporting issues of harassment or discrimination or other workplace problems? What should discipline look like for that? And also having greater unity with your coworkers. One thing that I've definitely learned from this process is how much of a community you build when you get everyone pulling in the same direction. We protect each other. We stand up for each other. We talk to each other.
Your employer didn't readily accept this move. Can you describe a little bit about the ways that they've resisted?
We're so united that they keep trying to throw common union busting tactics at us as if our combined, you know, voices will just be silenced by their massive wallets.
we are so unified and publicly saying that this is what we want that the company realizes they can't stop us from voting yes. So their tactic has largely been to try to otherize the union. They will not acknowledge our name, Game Workers Alliance Albany. They are constantly pointing at CWA, the Communication Workers of America, which is the union we're organizing with, which we will be part of, but they're otherizing and acting like it's not the workers ourselves doing this. It's CWA coming in and taking advantage of us. And they're also trying to, in some ways, turn the rest of our studio, the rest of our team against us, by saying things such as, we don't believe that this decision should be made by such a small, only a handful of employees that will affect the entire studio, which it won't. We're not going to be bargaining over anyone else's compensation or benefits or anything like that. We can't. We don't have that power. Only the company can do that. The company that is run by a small handful of individuals making decisions for thousands of employees. We've seen not so much captive audience meetings, but captive audience Slack channels.
Yeah, I understand you even filed a unfair labor practice charge against an executive for writing something in Slack.
Lulu,
right. Yeah.
It's a big statement saying, no, you're not a union, and we're listening to talk to you. But then they locked comments and allowed no one to respond to this big statement. They say one thing, yeah. They do another.
The origin of the unfair labor practice is because she said something along the lines of unionizing, delaying raises and improvements to benefits, which is not true. It's just that if the company wants to make a change, they have to make sure it's okay with the union. And again, the union is the workers. It would be us. So if we win our union, when we win our union, before we have a contract, if the company wants to give everyone a raise, they can come to us and we can discuss it as a unit and we can say, yes, absolutely, you can give us a raise.
Yeah.
And they can do it. There's nothing stopping them from doing it, but they're kind of manipulating
sure.
the truth here. It's really not true.
Right. It's funny to imagine you're collectively bargaining against raises.
That's what they think we're trying to do.
Yeah, but the power in that is if the company decided they wanted to downsize our department and lay off a third of us, like what they did to Raven, they would have to come to the union and we could say, absolutely not. You're not going to do that. We're not going to accept that. And if you try that, we will strike. And then you'll lose the entire department and probably other people who will join us in solidarity, which is going to severely impact productivity. So having the union gives us power that we didn't have before.
You explained what happens on Friday, which either you're going to have your vote or you're going to be waiting on a hearing. What's the next steps that you are seeing after this? As you say, when this is resolved, when you win this vote.
So the next thing we'll do after winning our union is get certified, sign our union membership cards. We'll elect democratically our bargaining committee, and we'll start having discussions as a unit about the kinds of things that we want to see in a first contract. We'll start determining how we're going to bargain with management, and we'll just get that process going. We'll have other mobilizing committees too to make sure that our strength continues to be seen, that we continue to act collectively, we continue to show our unity. The power of being in a union derives from your unity. So we want to make sure that we're seen as a strong, cohesive unit who will protect each other.
They said two heads are stronger than one. And so, you know, 20 heads is stronger than two, right? We're confident that we're going to win our union. And when we elect our bargaining committee, we're only going to be looking out for our best interests. There's no way we're going to be voting in any way, shape, or form to lose benefits, as if anyone would ever vote for a smaller paycheck or less vacation time. It would be insanity to do that. But that's the kind of games that they're playing with us. They're trying to convince everyone else. They're trying to convince everyone that we're the pariahs, that we're the problem, that we're going to cause issues for everybody else. And it's just frankly not true. So we're excited for the future.
That was Amanda Lavin and Matthew Devlin of the Game Workers Alliance. Because of the huge snowstorm expected in Buffalo, a decision on the company's appeal has been postponed. Reporting for Hudson Mohawk Magazine, this is Moses Nagel.
This is Otis M. Carson. I'm from NYC, and you're listening to WGXC, ACRA, Hudson, Catskill.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily, I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Georgia, and I'm also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love.
Books we hate.
Emily, that's your line.
Okay.
And bookish things.
And that's what we're going to do today.
Hooray. And we're often joined by our friend Fatia, but she couldn't make it today. But I'm glad to have Amelia and Georgia with us to hear what they've been reading lately.
Mm-hmm.
I've missed you all last week. The suspense was killing me. What have they been reading? I must know. Who would like to share first?
I never share first, so I'll go ahead. So I was sick last week, as you know, I couldn't make it to the library, but I had plenty of time to sit home and read. So I started reading, I have two volumes of it, of a graphic novel called Lore Olympus that was originally a webcomic. It is actually still an ongoing webcomic, so if you end up buying the volumes and read them all, you can actually find where you left off in the webcomic and read ahead. I got the volumes as a gift from my dad, actually. I wasn't going to get them because I already had the webcomic and I had already read it all. But it is very interesting to have in a physical copy because the comic site that it's hosted on is formatted differently than it would be formatted on the page. So you can look and compare how it looks, like compared to how it looks on the site and how it looks on the page. And that's really interesting. It's called Lore Olympus. It is a retelling of the story of Hades and Persephone, which is one of my favorite Greek myths. And it is very good. I think the art in it is really pretty. I've seen other people absolutely hate the art in it though. So it's, I think it gets a really hit or miss art style. Like, I don't know if you guys remember when the blue and black or gold and white dress was a thing. I feel like it's like that, but with an art style where you look at it and you either think it's gorgeous or you hate it. Mm. But I'm one of the people who thinks it's really pretty. And that's what I've been reading over the week.
There's occasionally graphic novels that do that for me where at first I'm like, I don't like this art. It's kind of like there's something off about it. And then you get into the story and all of a sudden you're like, it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting with webcomics especially because it's like Nimona where you can actually see the art start to progress. So it's like that since it was originally a webcomic. And I think Nimona was also originally a webcomic before it was a book. You can see the art actually start to improve and become more elaborate as the chapters go on, which is very cool. I also think the designs of the way the author draws the Greek gods is just really pretty.
Yeah, that looks really cool. So apparently it won the Eisner Award in 2022 for best webcomic.
Oh, that's cool.
And it says, I don't know when this was published. What was this? This was in July. The like headline also says, or like the little blurb under the headline says, the hit digital comic has accumulated over 1.2 billion views and 5.8 million subscribers on Webtoon. It reached number one on the New York Times bestseller list and is in development as an animated series.
Oh, really? I didn't know it was getting an animated series. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it sounds really good. There's a little picture of the art. It looks very pretty. I'm in team pretty.
Yeah. The most criticism I've seen about it is that there's very little like body type variation. And while that was definitely true at the beginning, I think it's gotten better. The way she draws the Greek gods as is very like interesting, with all of them pretty much having unnatural skin tones. Like Persephone is very pink, Hades is blue, and I think Hera has gold skin, and it's all very cool. And it makes it pretty easy to differentiate who's who, which is maybe why they didn't have much body type variation at the beginning, because they were already, it could be determined by what color their skin was, whether it be like pink or blue or gold or various other colors. I think it's very pretty though. I've always thought it was very pretty. It's a lineless art style, which I always like because I don't know how to do that. And if I see someone do art that I don't know how to do, I immediately like think it's cool and admire it. So yeah.
Cool. Thanks for sharing that. It's a good reminder that I need to read that one as soon as possible. Georgia, what did you want to talk about today?
So I recently finished a book. It's a novel called Blended by Sharon M. Draper. And this book, like all my friends said, I need to read this. It's like one of the best books ever. And now I can see why this is rated that. It's such a good book. And I feel like this book is very good. And not a lot of books are on subjects like this. Everything in it, like, is just so good. And the character is actually my exact age. And it just has so much depth. It's an amazing book. I'll read the description now. You're so exotic. You look so unusual. But what are you really? 11-year-old Isabella is used to these kinds of comments. Her father is black, her mother is white, but it doesn't mean she likes them. And now that her parents are divorced and getting along worse than ever, Isabella feels like a push-me-pull-me toy. Being split between mom and dad is more than switching houses, switching nicknames, switching backpacks. It's switching identities. If you're only seen as half of this and half of that, if people base whole identity on skin tone, how can you ever feel whole? And so this is by Sharon M. Draper, and it's called Blended. And I really like the color art. It's very simple, but very meaningful. It's Isabella holding a ice cream cone in a white dress, and her ice cream cone had fallen off. It is one scoop vanilla, one scoop chocolate, and it's fallen off the cone and then melted together at the bottom to this like light brown, and she's looking down at it. And I feel like the color art is very simple, but it's very meaningful, and it's a great book.
Yes, I've heard that's very good, but I've never read it. Have you read that one, Amelia? That maybe came out too late.
I haven't heard of it yet. No, I haven't. I don't think I've read it.
I think it's a more recent one, so you may have been a little, not that anyone's ever too old for a book, but may not have been on your radar like in school, because it may not have been out.
Yeah, I don't think so. Not yet.
I think it came out 2018.
Oh, well, then I would have been still in school, so I'm not sure.
Well, that sounds really interesting. I have a book to share as well. This one is a book for adults, but I think it would be fine for teens, maybe even for younger readers, but it might have some, can't remember if it has any like bad language or stuff in it, but it is a graphic novel memoir by Kate Beaton, who is a best-selling author and illustrator cartoonist who has some books that were geared more towards adults, like Hark a Vagrant is one of them. And then she also, oh, and Step Aside Pops, that one's good too. And then she also has written some picture books, written and illustrated some picture books, my favorite of which is The Princess and the Pony. And actually the pony makes a brief sort of a cameo in here, because there's a part where in her memoir, she shows herself drawing a picture of the pony. But so yeah, it's a memoir, but it's about 2 years of Kate Beaton's life. And so it takes place right after she's graduated from college and has an enormous amount of student loan debt. And so in order to not have debt for her whole life, she decides to take a couple years and go basically where the money is, where you can make money, which is, oh, and she's from Nova Scotia, from Cape Breton Island. And so she goes to Alberta, Canada, and works on oil fields, which is also just interesting thinking about, because when you think about authors, you think about them just being authors all the time, like they've always written or illustrated, and that's what they did. But for 2 years, she worked really long, long, hard hours at various oil fields in Canada. And so it's an interesting story, both, you know, about an author that I was familiar with, but also just thinking about that kind of work and about student loan debt. And she's one of a handful of women working in a primarily male environment and sort of how that impacts her. Right here, I'll read the description as well, so I make sure I'm covering everything important without giving too much away. Celebrated cartoonist Kate Beaton vividly presents the untold story of Canada. Before there was Kate Beaton, New York Times bestselling cartoonist of Hark a Vagrant fame, there was Kate Beaton of the Cape Breton Beatons, specifically Mabu, a tight-knit seaside community where the lobster is as abundant as beaches, fiddles, and Gaelic folk songs. After university, Beaton heads out west to take advantage of Alberta's oil rush, part of the long tradition of East Coasters who seek gainful employment elsewhere when they can't find it in the homeland they love so much. With the singular goal of paying off her student loans, what the journey will actually cost Beaton will be far more than she anticipates. Arriving in Fort McMurray, Beaton finds work in the lucrative camps owned and operated by the world's largest oil companies. Being one of the few women among thousands of men, the culture shock is palpable. It does not hit home until she moves to a Spartan, isolated worksite for higher pay. She encounters the harsh reality of life in the oil sands, where trauma is an everyday occurrence yet never discussed. Her wounds may never heal. Beaton's natural cartooning prowess is on full display as she draws colossal machinery and mammoth vehicles set against a sublime Albertan backdrop of wildlife, northern lights, and Rocky Mountains. Her first full-length graphic narrative, Duck's 2 Years in the Oil Sands, is an untold story of Canada, a country that prides itself on its egalitarian ethos and natural beauty while simultaneously exploiting both the riches of its land and the humanity of its people. As I was reading that, I was like, did I ever say the title of this book until just now? But it's called Duck's 2 Years in the Oil Sands.
That sounds really good. I want to read that.
It is very good. I read it in one sitting over the weekend, just sat down and read it front to back.
So it's this is a novel, correct?
It's a graphic novel. So it's a graphic novel memoir. And one thing that's interesting in it is there's so many different characters that you meet. And she has like basically anytime she switches job settings within the book, she has a picture that highlights some of the characters that you're meeting. So the people, their name, what their role is, and where they're from. And I found that really interesting. It's like basically impossible to keep track of everyone. There are some people that have maybe more of an impact or role in the story, but it's just interesting thinking about all the different people that do this work, some for a longer term than, you know, she did that for 2 years to pay off her loans. And some people do it as a career. Yeah, very interesting book, very different than her other work, which is more short form. Like the adult graphic novels that she has done are more like comic strips or comic frames compiled into a book. And then the picture books obviously tell a shorter story. But I do highly suggest Princess and the Pony, as well as her adult books. I didn't like King Baby quite as much, but I'm sure there's an audience out there for that one too. But yeah, that's my book for the week. We also got a ton of new books in at the library, both adult books and books for youth. There's a lot that I'm really excited about. One I don't know if I ever shared on the show, because I read it a really long time ago as a preview copy, but we finally got the print copy and it looks really pretty. Often the preview copies I read are not in color, so it's just like a little bit different of an experience to read them. But this one is called Brizzy, and it's by Claribel A. Ortega with art by Rose Lusanra. And it is a graphic novel, middle grade graphic novel, and I'll read the description on it for you. Marlene loves three things: art, her cool tia Ruby, and hanging out with her best friend Camila. But according to her mother, Paola, the only thing she needs to focus on are school and growing up. That means straightening her hair every weekend so she can have presentable, good hair. Those words were in quotes, presentable and good. But Marlene hates being in the salon and doesn't understand why her curls are not considered pretty by those around her. With a few hiccups, a dash of embarrassment, and the much-needed help of Camila and Tia Ruby, she slowly starts a journey to learn to appreciate and proudly wear her curly hair. It's a very sweet book. I like the family relationships in it. And another one that we just received that I have not read yet that I'm excited about, I've read other books by this author. The author is Ada Salazar. And at least, I think both of the other books I read by her were books in verse. At least one of them was. But this one is a book in verse, and it's historical fiction. And I'll read the description on this one. Oh, it's called A Seed in the Sun. Lula Viramontes aches to one day become someone who no one can ignore, a daring ringleader in a Mexican traveling circus. But between working the grape harvest in Delano, California, with her older siblings under dangerous conditions, taking care of her younger siblings and mama, who has mysteriously fallen ill, and doing everything she can to avoid papa's volatile temper, it's hard to hold on to those dreams. Then she meets Dolores Huerta, Larry Itleon, and other labor rights activists, and realizes she may need to raise her voice sooner rather than later. Farm workers are striking for better treatment and wages, and whether Lula's family joins them or not will determine their future. And I love a good novel. I love both historical fiction and I love a novel in verse. So it's a good combo for me.
All of these sound really good.
Yeah, I try to only buy the really good books. It's a goal of mine, you know. It's a good goal to have. Every once in a while, I might buy a dud. And also, there's books that are not necessarily for every reader. So you might love a book that somebody else despises. But yeah, those are a couple. There's a huge stack. I was trying to decide which ones to share. I'll stick with those two for this week, and maybe I'll highlight some others another week. But before we go for the day, is there anything that you all wanted to share that you're excited for, or next reads you have on your to-read list?
I'm excited because we might get snow tonight, or rather this night, and not the night that people are going to be watching the show. But
yeah,
I like snow. I think it's nice.
I like snow when it's like real snow. Like when it's either like enough snow that everything shuts down, or at least when it's like I'm awake to see it. I'm a little worried that the snow, if it happens, is going to happen in the middle of the night and then turn to ice by the time I'm up and just
make
for dangerous travel. But I am excited for snow in general.
Yeah, it's easier when you're like me and you don't go anywhere, like you don't have to commute to school or stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm also looking forward to actually being able to volunteer at the library later this week, and not get sick.
The perks of being healthy. Mm-hmm. Volunteer at the library.
Yeah.
Yay. How about you, Georgia? Anything you're excited for?
Snow.
You too, huh?
And winter is, fall and winter are tied for my favorite seasons, but I'm always like,